This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Morning, this is Frida Liu and you're listening to Her Vantage, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Women in Blockchain Asia is a not-for-profit organization founded this year with the main objective of fostering growth in the blockchain industry by equipping and empowering women to succeed in the blockchain space. With strategic partnerships, educational programs, and exposure to the latest blockchain projects, they're on a mission to ensure women are well represented and thriving in this exciting new digital space. I'm here with the president of Blockchain Women in Blockchain Asia, Ida Mao. Good morning, Ida.
Good morning, Frida. How are you?
I am good. You know, before we get into the Women in Blockchain Asia, a bit of story about yourself. Okay, you were previously M&A and corporate commercial lawyer, right? And then what happened after that to where you are now?
Oh, what happened after that? Okay, I will try to summarize it. But essentially, I'm one of those typical Asian girls or women who just went overseas to study. And during my time, you either become a doctor, lawyer, engineer, an accountant. Anything else is you're useless. So I took up law and from there became a lawyer and practiced in the UK, practiced in the international law firm, and everything was hunky-dory, became a partner of a magic circle firm. So everything was perfect. And then what happened was that my husband decided to relocate to Australia. So we built our lives there and I moved to Australia. And part of the things of becoming a lawyer is that it does suck in a lot of your time. And we postpone children is one of the reasons. So when we went to Australia, we decided to actually set up family and devote more time to the family and all that. So something's got to give, like anything in a typical Asian parochial setting. It's always right. The woman has to give. There it goes. I gave up my career. I gave up everything to be a full-time at-home mom. And after 8 years, I decided, yes, I need to come back. I'm ready to come back. Just to discover that for a woman, if you have taken time out for that long, that is actually taken against you. Everything works against you. And that just added to the list of things that is against me. So my foray back into the law was pretty much shut. It was difficult. This is even in the setting of Australia, okay? I know you hear all this in Asia, but I'm telling you, it happens also in Australia, okay? I'm known as what is in Australia is in the Western world as the double whammy, as in you're Asian and you're female.
Okay.
You get the double whammy, okay? And so I couldn't. That's how I ended. And so for a while, I did everything, really. I became a consultant. Anyone who invited me to do anything, I just joined. I set up a not-for-profit organization on Chinese language when I myself can't speak Mandarin and can't write in Chinese, but we built the not-for-profit organization anyway. It was just basically doing anything. And how I ended up with blockchain was that blockchain was just one of those things that popped up. And I didn't say, I just said, yeah, let's give it a go.
Right.
What have I got to lose?
Right. What is Sehat though? What are you doing with Sehat?
Sehat is actually one of my projects that I'm doing. And Sehat essentially is it's a blockchain project where utilizing the blockchain, it moves... It allows your data, your health data, to be controlled by you because you use the blockchain. So at the moment now, all your health data is controlled by a centralized body like pharmaceuticals, government, regulators and all that. What Sehat does is that first they take that data and bring it back to the owner, which is yourself, because it is your data. And once the data belongs to you, and once you own it, it's like a mortgage, like a house. You can do anything with it. So you can actually monetize it, tokenize it. And from there, through the monetization and tokenization, it then opens up health access and services that was actually shut from you in the first place. So, for example, if somebody wants to use your data now, wants to use your health data, you can actually ask them and tell them, if you want my data, you pay me, you reward me, you incentivize me. And so that's essentially what Sihat does.
Right. Okay. Now, if you were asked to describe blockchain to a layperson who knows little or nothing, how would you explain it? Where would you start?
All right. To a layperson, I normally start with Microsoft Excel. Everybody knows what's an Excel sheet. So I said, blockchain is like a giant, huge, and I'm talking about humongous Excel spreadsheet with a difference. In an Excel spreadsheet, you can actually go back to your cells and you can change it. You can edit it. You can delete it. You can basically do stuff in it. Now, just imagine if this Excel spreadsheet goes into the blockchain, what is stated there, what is recorded there, no one can remove it. No one can actually go there and change the cells, change everything. So blockchain essentially is a giant Excel spreadsheet that captures information and no one can go in there and change the information. And that is why with that information, that is good, that it provides transparency because anyone and everyone can see it. And it also allows, with that kind of data that is transparent and is open out there, it allows applications to be built on the blockchain that essentially utilizes those data, like Sihat, okay, to effectively deliver solutions to people. So, so that in a nutshell is like blockchain.
Okay, now you know blockchain technology is relatively new, you know, having only been in existence since 2008. If we remove cryptocurrency from the equation, right, the whole thing, what has fueled this rapid growth to where it is today?
If I remove cryptocurrency, it's really the technology. And it goes back to what I said just now. It's essentially that the ability to capture information and no one owns that information. No government can say, come to me. Trust me, what I give is the real thing. No, because that information is out there and it belongs to everyone. And that is powerful because especially in places, countries and in organizations, generally society has lost trust in centralized bodies. It's society has lost trust in regulators, in licensing authorities and other things because they're saying that I don't know what you're telling me is the truth anymore. So they seek out for other ways to verify the truth. And the best way to verify the truth is I verify you, you verify me, you verify another person. It's peer-to-peer verification. And all this verification is then recorded into blockchain, which is like, again, it's the giant Excel spreadsheet. But of course, you throw in the cryptocurrency, it fuels it faster.
Okay, so how do you get, you know, interested in this? How did you discover this yourself?
Again, I didn't say no to anything.
Okay.
when there was a project and they needed someone to help, in all honesty, that was about 4 years ago. I didn't even know there's a word called blockchain. But ego got into the way and I just said, yeah, I know blockchain, but actually I don't know what the hell, you know, what is blockchain? And I got involved to the end. I completely fell in love with that area and I saw its potential. I saw what he could do. I saw how he could help people. Me, myself, being an ex-M&A lawyer, I saw how corporate M&A, corporate securities, and everything, all this corporate stuff that I've done ensures that there is always a division of a them and us. And it's been perpetuated generations after generations. And I saw how blockchain can effectively come in and has the ability to actually disrupt the whole thing.
All right. Yeah. We'll talk about women in blockchain Asia and, you know, why this was started in just a moment. I'm here with Ida Mok. Stay tuned to Her Vantage BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. If you've just joined us, this is Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Ida Mok, a president of Women in Blockchain Asia, out there in Australia, if she is. Just want to ask you as well, right? How did the idea for Women in Blockchain Asia come about?
I'm a very transparent person, Frida, and it did not come out from me. It actually came out from my co-founder. Her name is Jasmine Ng. It has been with her for quite some time, and she was just waiting for the right partner to step up. Sorry, that was my dog. The thing is about Jasmine is that she saw, I don't know what she sees, but she saw that in me and decided to include me. Right. And I said, yes, why not? Because Asia is very unique. I'm an Asian woman. And as I said just now, we live in a very parochial society. Culture is our strength. Culture is also one of the weaknesses that pulls us down, that stops
right.
us. And so whatever movement, women movement, whether it's blockchain or anything else, that it has to be, for Asia to move, it has to be Asian-led. It has to have an Asian heart mindset. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, there are many other areas, like why blockchain? Why not just women in tech? Why go deeper than, you know, just technology?
Because there is enough, we feel that there is adequate representation of women in tech, women who code that's already out there. They're international, they're franchised, they're well-resourced, and Malaysia already have the representation. So we try not to over-duplicate. It's, the whole idea about all these things is collaborating together and not trying to compete against each other. But the blockchain is something that is not truly investigated and not truly represented. It has attracted a lot of interest, but not specifically from the women in tech, women in code, and all those things. And she also covers AI and all that, but not so much about blockchain because it's still very blokish, very nerdish, very geekish. Right. And it throws a lot of women off, and we decided to go into this. As you can see, I am not even a technical person, but to basically debunk that myth that you need to be technically minded to get into this space. Because look at me, I'm not even that, and I already started 3 projects in blockchain, and now the president of the Women in Blockchain Asia. It is possible, yeah.
So, and that's the thing, right? We needed, you were saying this, geekish and nerdish and very male. And so you needed the women in Blockchain Asia so that you get more women comfortable knowing that is, you know, we're learning together.
Yes, that's correct. And essentially is to demystify a lot of the acronyms, the adjectives, the language that is now permeating on the blockchain, which actually is nonsensical. A lot of them is nonsensical. And it can be reduced into basic English language. It can be reduced into communications. And it's not
hard. Give me an
example. They use words like FOMO, FUD, and all these things. It's not, in one statement, they'll string words. It is a peer-to-peer transaction that is using DLT, and you know, and then there's a word FOMO, and then that FUD comes in, and DeFi comes into place, and all that. And then you hear all these words that just come popping up from you. And I was there, I got frightened because not only I have to ask question, what is FOMO? I have to ask question, what is FOMO? What is FUD? What is DeFi? What is peer to peer? What is this? What is that? And the more you ask, the more you feel stupid in that sense. And we need, and I feel that as a woman, that that's because that's what I felt, and women to come in and say, actually, it's not that difficult.
What the sentence really means is
really sometimes nothing.
Okay. So they're just in this geekish world. I don't think also sometimes it's conscious. That's the thing, right? It's not conscious. It's just guys being geeky and just going into that. And so we need to change the language. Okay. So with that in mind, what are some of the initiatives that Weba has set up to do?
We have put certain programs in place. The right on top of the list is actually working with universities, academic institutions, where we are we're introducing protocols. We're liaising with protocols providers. When I say protocols, it's like people who built the blockchain, like Algorand, like Ethereum Foundation, like Solana Foundation. We're working with foundations like that, working with developers who actually built the blockchain, put them together with the university and to teach them how to code and code in a correctly in a way that it actually sits and talks properly to the blockchain. We want to cut through, we want to, two things we want to do. First is we want to raise a generation of credible coders, blockchain coders, out from Asia, not totally reliant on the West, but out from Asia. But because also we are women in blockchain, we made it a point to the university and said to them that every group that they put in, they must at the very minimum include one female at the start. Right. By the end of the year, we would like to see at least one team that is fully 100% female. And because that goes to our second aim is that we want to build more and more female coders, female builders, female who knows how to program. And where do you get this? You get this trained by the protocols developers themselves. Why is this important to me? And it is important to us. It's because women build things for a cause. And this is what I observed. In the blockchain scene, when a man built a project, it is for the technology because it's sexy, it is interesting. It is because also because it's making money. Most of the women that I came across that are actually building it start with a purpose to help something, to solve a problem, to solve a society problem, carbon footprint, things like that. And then the blockchain just is used because it's a technology that helps it. And that's why we need more women, because they put purpose, they put the mission, they put purpose into this. At the heart of it, everywhere,
So like women in blockchain Asia right now, have we gotten traction throughout Asia? I know we have representation in Malaysia and I guess representation in Australia for you, but are we getting, you know, traction across the region?
Yes, we've also launched in Singapore. And we are getting a lot of interest in Indonesia, and which was quite interesting. So this was not actually in our plan. We were saying Malaysia, Singapore, and the next one was Manila. Manila is still on the table, but out from it popped out Vietnam and Indonesia, and now getting interest as well from Turkey, and all of them are also from women, either individuals or organizations who understands the need to actually raise more women builders, thought leaders, policy makers sitting on a table affecting the blockchain, because a lot of these people who reached out and want to be to grow together with us in WIBA, be part of WIBA, is that because they all believe in the future of blockchain. And they want, before the setting is set, how should I put it, narratives are being formed by males, by men dominated, just like what happens in the corporate sector, in the banking sector. Women should come in now quickly and start setting that scene, you know? So they recognize that,
Changing the narrative, as you were saying, right? Yeah. What is your partnership with Reach? What does the collaboration entail?
Reach is the teaching architecture framework that Algorand uses. Algorand is one of the blockchain protocols that I spoke to you, I mentioned just now. That protocol is one of the initiatives that we put together with the university, where universities are then working with Algorand, utilizing Reach to learn how to code smart contracts and deploy them on the Algorand blockchain. So that's one of them,
And if you hear pitter-patter in the background, that's a very cute golden retriever in the background giving us lovely sound effects. So I think we'll just keep it in here because I think he's really cute because I can see him here. And another question as well, right, to go on a tangent. When it comes to, you know, cryptocurrency and NFTs, you know, of course, you hear market crashes and, right, can people differentiate that these are, you know, like, does it give blockchain a bad name when we hear this, you know, the association because crypto and NFTs are run by blockchain. So how do we dissociate this path?
Okay. So there's a few movements in your question. So to answer them first, does it give a bad name? The answer is yes. Okay. It gives a bad name by the people is because the perception they feel exactly as what you said, cryptocurrency and blockchain are majority of people equate them to be the same thing. And that's where it is wrong. Blockchain can actually work absent of cryptocurrency. Without crypto, it can still go on. Crypto cannot. They need the blockchain, okay? So, but the crashes that you hear is not the blockchain aspect. It's on the crypto, it's on the tokens. But because of the man on the street always equate crypto means blockchain, blockchain means crypto. That's what it's like.
It's the media's fault. We're giving publicity to crypto. And so you forget that there are so many other things you can do with blockchain, but that's the one that gets the, you know, the attention, right?
Yeah. So, but having said that, I also think this is my personal opinion. Okay. I also think that this bear market, this downturn market is actually good. Because it washes out scams. And one of the problems with crypto and blockchain is the amount of scams that is out there that is hurting people. And this bear market that's coming out will automatically wash them out, wash the scammers on the NFT projects that has no legs, you know, people who just launch an NFT to save the whales. And really, that's it. Save the whales. Save the next one is save the orangutans. The next one is save the apes. Okay, so there is no legs. The bear market is going to wash all this away and basically question the builders like me and say, what are you actually building? What are you actually trying to solve? Go back to the drawing board. Think again. So I think it's actually a good thing.
Right. I guess, okay, how can people get involved in Weibo? How can women, I guess, get involved in Weibo? Or maybe you're just open to, you know, all sorts of people to get involved. Who are you? Who would you like to also participate on this journey?
We are open to all women. We want all women to participate. How do you get involved? We'll go to our website. It's womeninblockchain.asia. It's very easy to remember. Okay, womeninblockchain.asia. And you can sign up to our, use the Google form there and sign up and subscribe to it. And basically, we will continuously release information of our events, our meetups, which is happening in September because I'm traveling to Malaysia and Singapore in September, October. So there's going to be a lot of activities in terms of meetups, education is going to be pushed out. KPMG is also working with us. We're going to do on corporate as well. So all these things are happening. So if you need to know, go to there. But we are also welcoming male allies. As you can see, the universities did not just offer it to women, we offer it to the males as well. Male allies who wants to help women and support women's cause to actually break into this. If you're a father, you're a brother, and you want to make your life better for your daughter, so when she comes out, you know that someone like me has stuck her neck out to break the bamboo ceiling, to break the glass ceiling, it's time for you to join Weibo.
All right. Thanks for spending your morning. I hope to see you in September. I've been speaking to Ida Mount-Preston of Women in Blockchain Asia. You've been listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise. I'm Frida Liu, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.